Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome. John Henry Soto here. George Batista, as always, is here with us, hanging out. And we are very excited. We have Charles Andrew Payne is going to be on the show tonight. We're super excited. We're going to be talking about his latest project, and we're going to talk about comedy. We're going to be talking about where he lives, which is a really cool, interesting thing. Please stay tuned. And we're going to do a lot of conversations about art and where we are today. So please hang on tight, and we'll be right back. All right. Thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in. By the way, thank you last week for everybody checking out that 80s music show, that 1983 music, because that actually was a lot of fun, and we got a good response on that. So thank you for all of you that tuned in to that. And today we have Charles Andrew Payne is going to be on the show. We're going to be talking so much, a wonderful actor, and you've seen him.
Yes.
Right? We were talking about that today.
Yes.
If you've ever watched a television, watched movies, you've seen him. So exactly. This is going to be very exciting, a great conversation. But first, before we get started, we're going to do some sponsor responsibilities and take it away, George.
Thank you, sir. So, as always, the Counterpart Show is brought to you by Wellness Resources, a family-owned and operated nutritional supplement company providing the highest quality, clinically formulated supplements since 1985. Find out why Wellness Resources supplements are the top choice of health-conscious individuals around the world. Make sure you go to myvitaminresource.com to check them out. And if you enter the promo code COUNTERPARTS, you will get free shipping on your order. So just make sure you check them out.
Cool.
All right. So, John. Exciting, exciting. Let's talk a little bit about our guest today. So we have Mr. Charles Andrew Payne on. So Charles is an actor, comedian, writer, and motivational speaker. He started acting at a young age and has appeared in numerous television shows, films, commercials, and theater productions. Some of his acting credits include roles on MacGyver, 21 Jump Street, Stargate SG-1, and The Santa Claus 2. As a comedian, he has toured across Canada and the USA, appearing at comedy clubs, comedy festivals, as a featured headliner. He speaks and presents at corporate events, providing talks on various business topics such as perseverance, resiliency, weaving in comedy and storytelling styles. In his latest project, he can be seen playing the role of Pastor Bruce Barnes in the film Left Behind, Rise of the Antichrist, which stars and is directed by Kevin Sorbo. The film will be released on January 26th, and we are very, very honored and lucky to have him on this program. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Mr. Charles Andrew Payne.
Woo!
All right.
All right.
Thank you very much. So, man, thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. Nice intro.
First class here, man.
Yeah, we want to take care of our especially, you know, it's important. George and I talk about this a lot, and the importance that the honor that we feel that people take time out of their schedules to spend it with us, you know, like two Puerto Ricans from the Bronx. You know, we're like, this is like such an honor for us. So,
yeah, exactly.
So we want to make sure that we really take good care of our guests. So again, thank you so much for being here. Now, one of the first questions, I know George has some questions set up, but I really wanted to talk about, and we're going to talk about this, you know, during the conversation, but you know, the last couple of years, you know, we've had some challenges, you know, and this type of auditioning, this visual thing has kind of gone to almost like a different place, you know. I want to talk a little bit about that. But do you remember when you realized that, oh, this is actually different, but did you like it, or were you a little bit not into that, the whole camera thing?
Here's the thing. Auditioning is what actors do. by any means necessary. That's what we get paid for. Performing is the reward for the hard work of auditioning. If you don't like auditioning, you are in the wrong business, right? Now, when it's flipped from in-room to online, a lot of actors went, I don't know if I like this. And I went, no, this works for me. Two reasons. I'm in a smaller market. But when we went online, the market opened up for me, right? Yeah. So
yeah, true.
It came right at the same time as I gotten a new management team, and they were, you know, all of a sudden submitted me for stuff filming everywhere. I love it. If we go back, maybe we'll go back to a hybrid situation, which is fine, because who doesn't like being in the room and getting feedback,
right?
And getting, you know, direction from the director or the producer. And but because the only downside to online is you don't always get feedback. You record it, you submit it, and then you go to the next one, and you record it, you submit it, you go to
right.
The next
one. Yeah. Yeah. There is something nice about being in the room as well. But I think what I've noticed also, a lot of casting agencies also realize that they can, their overhead can be a lot lower, where they can they can vet a lot of submissions right from their home, and then just gather their 20 solid that they want to see in person, and then that just kind of brings the cost down. So I think that's happening a lot. I know in New York, that's happening a lot. But auditioning is, you're right, it's part of the game. Like, I had an acting coach, and she just told me, because your job is not to get roles. Your job is to get auditions. Just get auditions and get a lot of auditions. That's your job, and then the rest of it is icing,
I tell actors all the time. I tell all the actors all the time, John, acting is when you get an audition, that's a calling card. It's like even your business card. I've been booked for roles based on auditions I did months before.
Right.
Where, my agent calls and says, I have a booking for you. And I'm like, they name the show. And I'm like, I don't remember auditioning for that. No, you didn't. But the director or the producer was in the room or saw your tape 2-3 months ago. And when this role came up, they said, oh, that guy that auditioned 2-3 months ago, that's the guy.
Wow.
Okay. So it's a calling card.
So you just got to be there.
The other thing too is, I'll tell actors coming up, when you get an audition, you've passed the first hurdle. Count that as a win, because they've screened out, how many agents send in all their people to make their suggestions, and they pick people to come to audition. That's the first win. It's yours to lose now, right?
Right.
So, and they don't know what they're looking for until I show up. That's my attitude.
That's right. There you go.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. Absolutely. Definitely.
George, I'll have you...
No, it's fine. But again, you could, what you guys were saying about the online stuff. Again, we see it on the music side too, right? A lot of these people in even on TikTok and Instagram and all these, they're becoming overnight sensations. Mm-hmm. You're seeing these kids play. I mean, where Justin Bieber came out of I think it was YouTube, right? Yeah, or something like that. Yeah. So, it happens all the time, but it's just an amazing thing. And what I wanted to mention to you, Charles, was that I didn't know, and John and I were talking about this, before you came on, that you were on an episode of MacGyver that I had watched a million times.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, you played the kid, and I was like, holy cow! I didn't know he was that kid in there. That and I know Cuba Gooding Jr. was in there as well. And I was like shocked that I didn't realize you were on that.
He was really cool.
Right, exactly.
Breeze.
Actually, even saw it because they still play it on some of the channels, and I think I saw it not too long ago. But one of the things I wanted to ask you is, because obviously I know you started modeling when you were young, and I think that's how you kind of got started in the business itself. Did you getting into acting? Did you actually work with any coaches? Was there formal training?
Yes. Oh no, I'm always in training.
Okay, gotcha.
Tiger Woods has a coach.
Yes, right? absolutely.
Right.
Acting is a skill that you have to hone and craft and train. So
Right. Whenever
there's downtime in between gigs, well, what I do, go back to reading, go back to studying, go back to prepping for the next audition. So I'll take a scene study class, or, you know, audition prep class, or always. And yeah, always been that way.
Do you find it that attitude is sort of being lost today, because we're in this like instant gratification thing where, you know, Instagram and, you know, everything is fast, and, you know, and a lot of actors, I think, I don't know if they put that work in. Like George and I are musicians. I mean, I remember we played 13, 14, 15 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, we just blinked, it went by like this. And, you know, in order to do that, and auditioning as well, you know, and studying and having your classes that you go to, what do you think about the way it's today with some younger, like, if you I know you mentor and you also do motivational, speaking. Do you get that? Like, I've been at this for like 6 months, man. I don't know what's going on.
Right. I've had this conversation, not so much about acting, but on the comedy side of life, where you see a comic who's just starting out, and all of a sudden they are recording their first album, and you're like, what? You barely got 30 minutes of material, and you're cutting an album. I mean, good for you if you can get it to work. I respect that, and go. But I think you got to pay your dues. You got to hone your craft. You got to put in your time. Yeah. And it's the same with acting. You know, I'm different when it comes to acting. I consider myself a journeyman actor. Mm-hmm. I have no, I say that, you know, and I mean, no disrespect to other actors who may go down this path. Fame should be a byproduct of the work that I do. It's not the, the be all end all of what I do. I will show up and say 5 lines. I'll show up and say 50 lines. I just want to work. I just want to tell stories.
Right.
And, you know, and being a Canadian-based actor, I joke and say all the time, I show up on a movie set and everybody's like, you've got this big grin on your face. Why are you so happy? I'm a Canadian actor on a movie set. I am happier than you could possibly imagine. I'm doing what I love. And that's all I want to do, because you know what? When they say rap, I'm unemployed again. Let's be real.
Right?
Everybody applauds at the end of the show and they say, that's a show rap for Charles Andrew Payne. And everybody's applauding. I'm like, well, back to the unemployment line. Got to go.
Right.
You're fortunate to have more than one booked.
Yeah.
You know, but that's what it is.
It's interesting because you could see, like, you have this appreciation for the fact that you are in a very small community of people on the planet that can actually have steady work in something that you really, really love as far as acting. It's like, I always said to myself, God, if I could be a studio musician for the rest of my life and get called every week to do this album and that album and this album, I'd be so happy, you know, that type of thing, just to be a regular working musician or working artist. So, but it gives you that appreciation that you have, that I'm actually a regular working actor and people actually call me to do these things. That's a great thing.
Yeah.
It's but you pay your dues. And the other thing too is, it's called show business.
Exactly.
The business part of that. I sat down and wrote out a business plan.
Wow.
Right. What are all the avenues that myself as a performer can generate revenue to feed myself? Right. So, you know, I can do voiceover work. I can do corporate video work. I can do film and television. I can do stage work. Have I checked all those boxes? Introduced myself to all of those people? And all I want to do is work. So, and the other thing too is open yourself to possibilities and say yes.
Yeah.
Right. When someone calls me and they say, oh, yes.
Exactly.
And also treat it like that, like a business too. You know, I think a lot of, that gets kind of lost. You know, it is show business and you got to show your business and you have to get out there. And one of the things that I talk about sometimes with, Dustin Hoffman, about loving the craft so much, right? And he was talking about how he would be doing it today if he hadn't got that break in 68, you know what I mean? He would have still been doing, he would have been doing somewhere. He was not going to stop because of the love of storytelling, you know, and that really has to come first. And what I find is when we're looking online, and so, you know, I also do a lot of work in social media. I'm a filmmaker as well. When you're talking to younger, they're really relying on the technology. You know, mm-hmm. they're relying on the technology to get them there. They're relying on the management company to get there. They're relying on the agent or the industry to get mm-hmm. them there. And I'm like, no. You have the goods. You know, yeah. You have to show that, you know, that's something that I'm very passionate about, to try to convey to younger artists in all mediums, you know, because it's something you got to put your dues in.
Yes.
You know, and it's really, you know, George mentioned the TikTok, right? Mm-hmm. Some of these TikTok artists, and they'll put out a song, and next thing you know, they're got a million followers. Mm-hmm. And but put them on a stage and see if they're going to be able to go on tour.
Right. Yes.
And what about longevity?
Right.
Yes, exactly.
Do you want to be a flash in the pan, one-hit wonder, or do you want to have a career that spans decades, if you're lucky, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
you want to be able to, yeah. George and I talk about an article written by Ted, what's his name, Goya?
Ted Goya, yeah.
Goya. So mm-hmm. he wrote this article about how 70% of all the music that's streaming is old music from past 30 years ago, meaning that the stuff that we're all listening to is the classic stuff that's been, that they worked on it, that they sweated, and the stuff that just fades away, that has no longevity, it's the stuff that you see coming out of TikTok and these dum dum ba dum dum ba, you know, whatever.
Right. Right.
So yeah, it's very interesting. Very interesting.
And more power to them, I say, if, you know, if that works for you, but think, you know, a good for you, it's an avenue in, but think about where you want to be 10 years from now,
right?
15 years from now, or 20 years from now, right?
Yeah, if they could incorporate both.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
You know, those things.
My social media advisor, my 15-year-old son, tells me all the time that I don't do that part.
I know what you mean, man. I know what you mean.
Like, man, you can't be on Facebook. Grandpa's on Facebook. You need to be on TikTok. You need to be on Instagram. I'm like, who's got that kind of time?
Yeah. Exactly. I know. I'm a social media manager for some companies, and I did that for a while. So that was part of the hardest part. It was trying to get people to understand that part of it. And I think artists are more, you know, I think they show a lot about what they're doing. And actually, I would like to get your views on this about social media, you know, and how it's completely kind of changed things. But they're showing their daily life a lot of times. They're showing their lattes and their meals and their dogs and cats and stuff. And it seems like the focus of what they're doing, their art, their work, and sometimes it's just very few, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, if you have this tool, you know, it, you can use it and it's free, you know, for the most part. I mean, you know, why not take more advantage of it, you know? Is that something that you think about?
I do. I know a couple of performers that do it really, really well, and I admire them for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would like to do it better, but I'm always, you know, if I'm being honest, social media terrifies me. Mm-hmm. I'm on it. I'm on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I'm on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I do have a TikTok account, but I think I've only posted two things on it, only because I was poked by my friend to do it. I'm on Twitter, but Twitter is kind of strange.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't post very often, but sometimes I'll post like comedy material, but I've not posted pictures of my meals and what have you. You know, and I would like to be able to do it better, because let's be real. It's the world we live in.
Yeah.
So you need to participate in somehow, like I said, hence why I said to my son, I will pay you to look after that for me.
Right? Great idea.
That's smart. Idea. Yeah, it's smart.
Because he's got his finger on the pulse. He knows, you know, right. So he's, right? He's the one who said to me, Dad, you know, I know you want to keep, you know, you're kind of introverted, you want to keep to yourself, but you're kind of a public figure, so let's at least create an Instagram account for you,
right?
And yeah. You promote. So I'm of the old school of when I have something to promote, I will go out into the public and promote it. Like I have the film coming out, you know, this Thursday. Yep. Okay. Then I will post on social media about that. I'll do interviews and what have you. And then when I have nothing to promote, you won't hear from me.
Right. But, and it's true. I kind of understand that because I'm introverted by nature. Even for me to do this show, and John will tell you, I mean, we grew up together, so he knows what's in my brain. And for me to just even do this was a big deal for me because I was very like, be on camera, do anything. Like, no, I can't do this. You know, that's why I was the drummer. I was always in the back. Right? People didn't see me, you know? So, but it's just funny how, but again, I look at social media as a tool, you know, as like for this show, we're using this and the platforms that we use, this is a tool to get your message out, to get our message out, to get this conversation out. And when I think of it in those terms, I'm like, okay, you know, I you know, it kind of takes a little bit of the fright away in my brain anyway, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm always thinking. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm not shy, but I always think there's got to be purpose behind what I do.
Yes.
Right.
Posting
for the sake of posting.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and sometimes I do run it by my filters, my wife and my sons, and I say I had this idea because but should I post this? Is this okay? Is this gonna upset anybody?
These days, you never know. You know?
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Social media, I think it's a fantastic tool.
Yep.
And I love what it's done for a lot of people to boost their profile. But everybody has an opinion.
Yeah.
Everybody is argumentative. Sometimes I will post something, but it's not. You don't have to disagree with it or agree with it. You can look at it, and if you don't like it, don't like it.
Right.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
Yeah.
We don't need to fight about it.
Right. Right. No, you're right.
Yeah, that's not the world we live in. Unfortunately, I dove in to social media because I'm kind of a clown, and I kind of like I do a lot of things. So I will be that guy that'll just be think of something silly in my car and just be like and just do it, you know? The purpose is to lift someone. You know, whether it's with humor, whether it's with a message, whether it's something that I'm going through that I think could help someone else. For me, these platforms are always that. I want to make someone laugh. I want to make them think. I want to make them, even if they get a little upset, but they're thinking.
Yeah.
Another viewpoint, a different, you know, idea. Then for me, it's like I did my job. And yeah, I do get a lot of, you know, that hate and that hit. You know, I got... Last week I got hit really hard for some reason and I did a little post on it, but instead of like taking it, I went on and I did like and I talked about it. And how do I handle haters? I don't respond at all. Like one thing. They sit there and without anything, you know, and it doesn't matter what they say. So for me, it's like, cause they're not the reason I'm doing it.
Yep.
If I make a comment, well, then I lost. I'm giving them a platform.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You know,
sometimes I like to say I'm a social media creeper. I like to scroll through and look at stuff, but I don't engage.
That'll be in the dictionary somewhere or in some medical book. Really? Social media creeper.
Social media creeper. I just look.
So talk a little bit about the comedy. How did that start for you? And who do you like in comedy?
All right. So let me give you my comedy story because it's kind of silly. I love comedy. Like, you know, Def Comedy Jam, Eddie Murphy, Dave Chappelle, Bernie Mac. Bernie Mac was my boy. Bernie Mac was my kind of comic because Bernie Mac said what you were thinking and he'd say, I know you're thinking it. Right?
I love Bernie.
Yeah.
And I like to, when I do comedy, I like to say that I like to educate while I entertain. I'm not a joke teller. I'm a storyteller, right? And sometimes I tell stories, and then they laugh, and I go, oh, they didn't laugh there last time, but they laughed here. That's interesting. And next night, or sometimes same show, two different shows in the same night, the same venue, and people laugh in different places. I love that. It's a connection with the people. But to answer your question, how I got started, used to go to open mic nights all the time. There was one comedy club. Wednesday night was open mic night. My buddies and I would go have a few beers, some chicken wings and what have you, and watch the comedy show. Doing that for a few months. One night we're there, and my buddies are killing themselves laughing. And I'm like, they're not telling me, but they're whispering to each other, and I don't know what's going on. And then the MC, so the show starts, he brings up two or three comics, and he goes, oh, you know, coming to the stage next, I don't know much about him, but his friends tell me he's very, very funny. Put your hands together for Charles Andrew Pitt. And I went, what?
Oh, no.
And my buddies are just laughing, and I'm like, what? And they're like, no, we signed you up. You know you want to do this. Go, go. So I'm like, what do I talk about? Tell that story you told us on the way here. So I went on stage, and I told a couple stories, and people laughed. And I've been acting for a while, and I've done theater and everything. There is no high like that feedback that you get from an audience when you're doing comedy.
Wow.
There is nothing that comes even close to it. Comedy is one of the things I would gladly do for free.
Wow.
It's so much when you connect with and you tell a story and people relate to it. And if you indulge me, I'll tell you a quick story why I do comedy. This happened just before COVID. And where I live in Calgary, in Alberta, there's, you know, in Calgary, there's like three comedy clubs, but there's a lot of pop-up comedy nights. So they're not open mic nights per se. Like they'll have a few amateurs and maybe a pro MC in the middle and a headliner. And it was a jazz bar. And they had once a month, they do a show there Thursday nights. And I was asked to come in and headline the show. I think it was the fourth time out. And so I go and I did like a 45-minute set. And afterwards, I went out on the back. There was a back patio, and there was an older gentleman there, probably in his late 70s, early 80s. He comes up to me, and he says, just wanted you to know, I hate that they do comedy here. This is my watering hole. This is where I come to have a few drinks with my friends, see them, and you guys do comedy here. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry. He goes, no, hear me out. But you started talking and telling your stories, and I told my friends to shut up. And he goes, I was laughing and I was crying. Can I hug you? He goes, because you brought back memories for me.
Wow.
Because I talk about being an immigrant because I grew up in a third world country, and then I moved to Canada. And I talk about that and how, you know, the transition for me and how hard that was. And I make it funny because there was, you know, there's third world living and then there's first world living.
Right.
And he says, I'm an immigrant too. And that brought back so many memories. And he was crying. He's having, and I'm like, I'm gonna hang on to this memory because this is why I do what I do.
Yeah.
Amazing. That's
when you touch people. That's why.
Yes.
Right. Comedy.
So I'm very proud of that moment.
That's awesome. Wow. I mean, I'm a huge comedy fan also. And we, you know, I watch, I don't know, if, you know, Nate Bargatze. I watch, you know, I listen to his podcast every week, and he's got some guys there that just, and just like Brian Regan and, of course, Eddie Murphy and all those guys. I mean, they were just, I mean, Eddie Murphy was such part of my youth.
Yeah.
I mean, Delirious was like, who didn't walk around just word for word? Right.
Exactly.
Like, your mama welfare. You know, I mean, I grew up in the Bronx, so that, you know, it was like totally relatable. You know?
Right, exactly.
And just so funny.
When I started doing comedy, because I grew up in Canada, and I grew up watching Def Comedy Jam and Eddie Murphy and those kinds of guys, my comedy was kind of more mimicking. And I'm gonna give a shout out to a comic that I love, Daryl Lennox. He's from Florida. He's one of the most underrated comics I know. But Daryl Lennox came up to Vancouver when I was in Vancouver, so I started doing comedy. And Daryl Lennox said to me one night after a show, he says, Charles, you're funny, but I don't believe you. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, because when I talk to you one-on-one and you tell me your stories about you, that's funny. And then you go on stage and you tell jokes. He goes, that's not you. I want you to go on stage and tell your story.
Wow.
Right? And I was like, oh, okay. So I started doing that. And he says, yeah. He goes, here's the secret to comedy. Always tell the truth. Just lie while you're doing it.
That's nice. That's a t-shirt or a bumper sticker.
That's
or
it. Yeah, that's, you know, it.
But it's about telling your truth. So after he gave me that talk, I stopped writing jokes and started, you know, I would always start with the premise, tell yourself the truth about yourself. So all my jokes are very, very much immersed in truth, stuff that's happened in my life. And it's our job as storytellers and as performers, we see the world different. So it's kind of like, hey, did you all see this? Or did you think about it this way? Or this weird thing happened, right?
Right.
That's the, for me, that's the, you know, my highest compliment I could give to another comedian is when I see you perform and I go, man, I got to go write new material. I wish I had thought of that. That's wow.
Yes, you know? Right.
Yeah. And I mean, isn't that really the responsibility of an artist, really? You know, because in every art, you have to have your truth. It doesn't matter if you're up there and you love the blues, but you think, I don't want to play the blues because I'm not. But you go up there and you do heavy metal. What people are going to see right through that.
Yes.
Do what you love and do what's really true to you. And that's always, and that may sound cliche and when a million people say it, but
no,
they say it because it's true.
It's the kernel of the absolute truth.
Yeah.
Because comedy, acting, you know, I'm a writer, motivation, it's all got to be based in what you know. Because I can tell if you're not telling the truth, if you don't believe in what you're saying and are doing, I can read it. I know. I'm like, that was okay, but I didn't feel like I got to know, you know.
Right.
I didn't have. It's about a human connection.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I like to say, who are we if not the story we tell ourselves about ourselves? Art is so important. Can you imagine what our world would be like without artists?
You know, John, this is John and I have talked about this at length, that exact concept.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, well, first of all, I honestly, this may be ridiculous to say, but I don't think that the planet would be here if there was no art, no artists. Well, what would be the purpose? And first of all, I mean, you know, if you believe in God, which I do, look around you. I'm in Tennessee. Tennessee is gorgeous. I mean, I was driving just from the supermarket and you see the mountains and you see this beautiful sunset. I'm like, well, there's art right there. Who created, you know, who's the biggest artist in the universe?
Exactly.
Right? So I'm like, that's the art right there. You know what I mean? Yeah. And if we didn't have that, what would we have here? You know, we're going to have like a Borg from Star Trek, just a cube, right. You know, just a cube that just walks around and we just walk around all day just staring at each other.
You know what I'm in awe of, John? When I read a book or I watch a movie or I see a piece of art, I'm always remind myself that that came out of somebody's imagination.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even like the sci-fi movies
or a
script, like somebody sat down
and
put that out, right? So why won't I take a minute to admire it? And I'm always, you know, take a minute to go, I am so grateful that I live in this time to experience this beauty. Or, you know, like even like the Marvel movies and stuff, being a nerd that I am, I'm so grateful now that we live in a time that we have the technology to actually view those films properly.
Right. Yeah, and everything looks amazing, and the sci-fi and the CGI is like the most incredible thing. Yeah, I mean, I have a 6-year-old son, and my daughter is 11, and we watch those things, and I'm into it. I'm a kid when I'm watching, you know, those things. But you're right, and you know, I'm also kind of cheesy. I'll be out, you know, with friends, even when I was younger, and in New York City. I'm from New York, and if I was in Manhattan and you see these old beautiful buildings, I'll be like, man, look at this beautiful architecture. You know, my boys were like, all right, John, you know, let's go. You know, we're going to go eat. I'm like, yeah, but I mean, look at this gorgeous, because I do appreciate that someone 100 years ago designed that building,
right,
and wanted people to admire it. You know, now we make blocks, right? Some of the buildings are blocks, you know, but this beautiful architecture, and you look in Manhattan, you look up and you're like, oh my God, this is really beautiful, you know?
We talked about longevity, right?
Yep.
You know,
right.
And I always say to my kids, everything you see around you, even the phone that's permanently glued to your hand, do you know that there was a design team?
That's right.
There's somebody who drew that. Somebody had the concept and came up with the idea, and you're appreciating it without really appreciating that the work that went into creating that, right? The work, you know, you're watching all your YouTube and your TikToks and stuff, but somebody had to come up with that idea.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where would we be?
Yeah.
Without imagination.
We're surrounded by art every second.
Exactly. Even in the music space, and we, John and I have talked about it as well. Like, music changed my life as a kid, and you know, it, you know, the creation of music and these bands that I got into when I was a kid, holy cow. And to this day, you know, and I've passed that appreciation of that to my daughter, who now loves music.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. we'll be in the car listening to this song, and I'm like, listen to this, just listen to this song, listen to how beautiful the melodies. And you know, you think, and I have such an, as I've gotten older, I've got such an appreciation for the creativity and what it does to me on a spiritual level. And you're like, wow, you know, it completely changes your whole
spiritual,
idea.
That's why.
Yeah, exactly. It is a spiritual thing.
It's 100%. Yes.
Music, musicians, I have great admiration for you guys. I mean, I played a few instruments, I dabbled, but you're speaking a whole different language. And music is mathematics, and mathematics is a universal language of the world, right? It's
That's
the
right.
universe speaks in mathematics. So, I mean, trying to impart that to these kids coming up, they don't always necessarily get it. And the ones that do, you can tell. But again, why as human beings do we are drawn to art and to, you know, those things like music and paintings and story? You know, ever since we could sit around a campfire, we told stories.
Yeah.
Right.
That's why I'm an actor. It's to tell stories.
Yeah.
I'm a storyteller, right?
I mean, one of the oldest instruments ever, guitars ever found was like in Egypt, and it was like a guitar, and it was like a little tiny guitar they found. It's got this wood thing, and it's got these, like, the strings aren't there anymore, but you can tell what the purpose of it was,
right?
So you can imagine how long this has been going on, and even longer than that, you know.
So
music is something that for George and I, you know, and for everyone, it's just a such a powerful thing. And art in general is around us all the time, whether we know it or not. This shirt, this really nice shirt that I'm wearing, was designed by someone. I don't know who. It's got a color. Somebody had to think about it and say it's going to be this color and it's going to have these stripes. You know, this hat.
Every once in a while, John, you see an article of clothing, and I think, okay, well, two crimes were committed there. First of all, somebody decided that they wanted to make that, and second, somebody decided to buy it where.
Well, I don't know what's going on in fashion. I mean, I'm all for create, but I've seen some things walk down the runway. I think I saw someone with a desk on his head. With a desk and holding like a chair, and that was his outfit. But, you know, again, someone had to think of it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I want to I'm sorry, you going to say something?
I said that falls under the caveat for most things. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Absolutely. You're right.
Exactly. I want to kind of transition a little bit, because we want to talk about Left Behind, Rise of the Antichrist, which is going to be released in, I think, in
on Thursday.
January 26th, two days
from now. Yeah,
that's
exciting. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved in the project and working with Kevin Sorbo and that great cast that you have in there. I know Corbin Burnson is in there.
Corbin Burnson, Neil McDonough. You know, I've worked with Kevin. This would be my third project with him. Hopefully there'll be more, knock on wood. Kevin and I worked together a number of years ago when he was on Andromeda. I did a guest star on there, Space Bounty Hunter, Dan Aluck. And then he came to Calgary And it was so funny because I reminded him when I walked on set, because he came to Calgary to do another film that I did with him called Miracle in East Texas, which is a period piece that takes place in the 1930s. And again, coincidentally, I played a reverend in that one. I played Reverend Reese in that one. And Left Behind, I play a pastor.
Right.
So I'm like, Kevin is typecast me, but that's
right. Wait a second.
And yeah, so Left Behind, I don't know how much you know about the background of this. I first of all, let me say, I read the script when they sent it to me, and the role of Pastor Bruce Barnes resonated with me. Again, I'm a storyteller. And the story here, it's for those, you know, it's a faith-based film about the rapture.
Right.
And you know, how shocking would it be to be the pastor of a church? And a lot of your congregants have been taken in the rapture, but you're left behind. You're still here. And he has to confront, and his arc is lovely to me. It's it resonated to me. It wasn't even that it was a faith-based film. It's the human condition that I started thinking, you know, what would happen if I woke up in the morning and my wife and my kids were no longer here? How would I feel, right? Take the religion out of it. How would I feel as a human being?
Sure.
And then you layer back in the religion piece, in that he was a foot in the door, foot outside the door. He talked the talk, but he didn't walk the walk. He didn't necessarily believe what he was preaching. He'd lost his faith. And then the rapture happens. Mm. And he has to confront the fact that maybe this is all real. You know, I preached about it.
Sure.
And then it happened.
Right.
And now what do I do? Right. And then it's about redemption and hope. It's about finding his way back and finding purpose to help the people who were left behind. That's how I saw that story. And so, and every once in a while you get an opportunity to audition for something. Cause even though I knew Kevin and what have you, the casting director in town had sent it out to my agent, who sent it to me, and I read it and I said, so I'm going to put it on tape. But I was like, this story feels so real to me in that the human condition pieces that, you know, when sometimes you come across something and you go, I get this guy. I understand him from the human connection piece, which is very important to me, right? It doesn't matter what the vehicle is. It's that does this story, even if you weren't a Christian and you didn't believe, could you watch this film and identify with the struggles? And that's what's important to me. I could identify with the struggle. I could identify with where he was going and the pain he felt, and then the redemption that he felt and helping people. So I was like, yes. And then coincidentally, I put it on tape and I sent it in and everything. And then the casting director told me, he says, you were the first person cast.
Wow.
apparently, you know, outside of Kevin and he says, they said, nope. That's Pastor Bruce.
Wow.
So. Wow.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. You know, and it's the story. I saw the trailer a few times, and the story is really sort of ripped out of today's consciousness that's happening right now. Yes. There's a lot of reality in, you know, I'll say reality, but others may say there's a lot. The conversation is happening right now. This is not, you know, this is this could be a documentary, is what I'm trying to say.
I'm glad you say that, because people have asked me this, right? You know, well, you know, are you religious? Do you need to be religious to what? I said, no. When you watch this movie, right? They're talking about a one world currency. They're talking about, you know, the divisiveness that's happening in our world today that we all experience. If I took the religion out, it's still a story. Like you said, it could be a documentary. The tagline for this movie is, it says, you know, a true story that hasn't happened yet.
Right.
And I almost want to say, no, it's a true story that's happening right now. Take out the rapture piece of it. We just came through a pandemic.
Yeah. Right?
You know,
right.
And I was saying to my wife, I said, you know, I don't think most people realize the depth of this. You take away the divisiveness and what have you, millions of people still died.
Right? Yeah.
We survived.
Right.
We are still here. And I've seen whether, you know, you think, oh, the pandemic was a hoax, blah, blah, I don't care. I've witnessed it personally, how it affected me, how it affected my family, how it affected my. So when this movie, you kind of look at it, you go, even if I filter out the religious piece of it, a lot of this stuff resonates.
Yeah, a lot
of this stuff, you go, you know, take any event in our modern world now, and we are all graduates of the University of Facebook, where everybody has an opinion and everybody's an expert and everybody is going to, you know, it's instead of being a world where you can have an opinion and you can have an opinion and I can listen to your opinion and we can have an intellectual discussion on it. And I may not 100% agree, but maybe we can agree to disagree and we can still be friends. That doesn't happen anymore.
You're right.
Absolutely.
I raise my children this way. I tell my boys all the time, as you go out in the world, open yourself to the possibility that everything you think you know might be wrong. That way you're open to learning and listening and hearing different opinions, and then you can make an informed decision based on what you're hearing. Question everything, but don't hold too tightly to what you believe, because history has told us there's a lot of stuff. If you look back in history that we
believed,
people died for, and now we look back and go, what were they thinking? How did they not see how ignorant that was? Can you imagine 100 years from now, people looking back at how we're living now? I ask myself this all the time. What are they going to say about the opinions and the values that we are holding so tight to now that they might look back and go, couldn't they see how ignorant that was? How did they not see that? So open yourself to the possibility that you might be wrong.
And if you have that, and that's a wonderful way of raising your children, and that's something that I talk about as well with my kids.
Me too.
Really be open to, first of all, listen, you know, because it just seems like everyone is, they're not listening to listen. They're listening to respond, you know, because they disagreed with the first three words out of your mouth, that they're already on whatever narrative or whatever they've actually, whatever, you know, words have been pinned together that everyone seems to be using, right? They're ready to actually spit that out, you know, and so they're not listening. So I always tell my kids, just listen, you know, listen, because you're right. We don't know everything. And, you know, in, you know, 600-700 years ago, the world was different. People thought, you know, the world was flat. You know, some people still think the world is flat, but that's another conversation. that's another day. But, you know, there was a lot of confusion going on, you know, back then. And people were saying that it was true. You know, how did you cure somebody? Bloodletting was an actual thing. People would just bleed to death because bloodletting, you know, it's like. And now we know that bloodletting is really not good.
I take all of that into this role in this telling of this story, because, you know, some people say, oh, well, you know, Charles, you know, are you religious? Well, yes and no. But is it relevant to today?
Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Can you take something? And here's another way to look at it. Here's a different point of view. That's kind of how you tell a story, right? Hey, it's imagine if. And people fight over silly things about, you know, about movies and stuff. And I'm like, you know, you're fighting about an imaginary character in an imaginary world that has no real, but you're going to fight about it.
Talk about Star Wars next.
But you know, it's interesting because you said something there when you mentioned about what if I was left behind and my family was gone, right? And movies that make you think, I love movies that make me think. And I don't know if I'm a little weird on this, but there are a lot of times where I'll see movies like this and I'll think to myself, if that was real, I wonder how I handled it.
Right.
What did I do? Am I still alive? I realized, like, when I walk away from that movie, that stays in my head. And then I know, you know what? That movie did a good job because they actually told a great story, made me think, and made me wonder what I could do and maybe things that I should prepare for down the line, that, you know, later on.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Well, you know, I want people to walk away from this movie. And just like you said, George, this is why when I go to a film, to me, it's a really good film. If I want to afterwards, I want to go with whoever I went to the movie with, grab a cup of coffee or drink and discuss.
Right.
Right. To me, that if my brain is going a mile a minute and I want to talk about this. Is that possible? Is that not possible? Right. I want people to go away from this. And even if you're not religious, you don't believe in the rapture or what have you, but you go away and think about how relevant is some of those themes today.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What happened with cryptocurrency and a one world currency, the divisiveness that happened. And the other thing that I always talk about either, you know, let's take all of that out of this. What happens in this film is the rapture happens and the thin veneer that we call civility is ripped away.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We saw that during the pandemic.
Yeah, you're right.
The thin veneer of civility got ripped away and you saw the true blue colors of human beings. And I go, wow, when did we stop? Because I leave my house and enter the world with two premises. First, seek to do no harm. Mm-hmm. And second, start with kindness.
Right.
And where did those things get taken away from? You don't have to be religious for that. That's just civility. That's just... Yeah. Being a human being sharing space with other human beings, right?
Exactly.
It should be just human nature, and it is innate in everyone, you know. But hate is taught,
right?
You know, we're not born with hate. You know, hate is taught, and the media, and I mean, again, we don't want to go all into that, but the media has a very, very purpose agenda. And it really is something that is frightening. We don't watch any news in this house. We don't even have a TV, you know, we stream movies and we'll, you know, but it's because it blackens your heart when you see something and people think, well, you want to know what's happening in the world. That's not what's happening in the world.
Right. Nope. Exactly.
That's not what's happening in the world. That's what they're showing you that's happening in the world. And this film took a lot from the headlines. It didn't do, you know, right? It was like a lot of it was from the headlines. So you can take the religion out of this and watch this as like a holy cow movie. And like, what would I do in a situation like that? Like what George was saying, you know?
Yeah. Manufactured news. Unfortunately, you know, someone else gave us this phrase and fake news. But you know,
right.
News, I don't know. Maybe I'm old enough to recall a time when you watch the news to be informed.
Yeah.
And now you watch the news to be entertained. And and people could tell whether you're a liberal or a conservative, but depending on which station you get your news from.
Right.
That's not how it used to be. I'm old enough to remember I was young enough, but you know, I miss Walter Cronkite.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's gotten so bad where you'll hear, and this was something that I heard. This was maybe about 10 years ago, and I remember watching the news somewhere standing online, and it was the post office, and they had the news on. And this lady, this is what she said. She was talking about a fire, and she says, she goes, there were no survivors. And now here's Gene with the weather. So we got some rain coming. I am not kidding you that there were. It was me standing online, and there was another lady behind me that was like, she was like, oh, my God. She just said, oh, my God, I can't believe they just went like that from the weather. Yeah. And I was like, wow, how cold it's become and what a show it is.
Yeah.
And that's what worries me the most. That's why, you know, I say I approach every project that I'm invited to be part of when I'm deconstructing the character is where do I see myself in it? And I saw myself a lot in Pastor Barnes. How is this relevant? And where's the humanity? Where's the human connection?
Yes,
like, strip everything else away. Is there a method, a means in there to get a message? For me, the message is about let us not lose our civility.
Right.
Let us respect, and we share space with all these people, and by virtue of me sharing space with you, you get a level right there of respect. We start from there. It's yours to lose. We can go up or down, right? But that's where I start from. We share space, and we're only here for a little while,
right?
And what if the rapture did come and you're left behind? Like, seriously.
Yeah,
I mean, there's just so much Netflix you can watch.
Yes. And again, though, at the end of the day, you still have to connect with human beings. We're wired to be social animals. We're wired to connect. I mean, if one thing that COVID taught me is how much, because I'm an introvert. So, you know, everything shut down, everybody worked from home, stayed home, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, nothing's different for me. This is good. But after a while, you kind of go, you know, now that you've taken it away from me, I want to go and hug somebody. I want to shake hands when I see my name. I'd like to actually see your smile. I used to joke to my wife. I said, I'm putting my mask on and I'm standing in front of a mirror. She goes, what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to practice smiling with my eyes.
Well, funny enough, that is something. I remember going to an event during COVID and having a mask and everyone else did. And you can see kind of like it's coming through a little bit, you know. I didn't want to get used to that. Trust me. I mean, that was not the way, you know, but at least you can get some type of that, what you talked about that humanity.
Yeah.
You know, that's there, you know, we're not our masks, you know, and
exactly.
It's amazing.
I'm a real person under here. Yes. You know, nothing wrong with greeting people. You know, it's so funny to me because occasionally when I'm out and about, I laugh because I always get a funny story. I put it in my comedy too. I get mistaken for Samuel L. Jackson a lot.
Right.
And people will come up to me. People come up to me and I at first I was irritated by it because I'm like, you know, God damn, I'm an actor too. Right. And now I just kind of laugh about it. And, you know, my wife thinks it's hilarious because, you know, we'll be out somewhere and people are turning and looking at me. And I said, nope, they're not recognizing me for me. I bet you someone's going to come up. Two things. Depends on where I am.
Right.
Most places in the world, it's Samuel L. Jackson, except when I'm in the United States and down in like the southern half of the United States, I get Emmett Smith.
I can totally see that. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm like, no, I'm not him. And I've had people say, no, just can we just take a selfie? And I'm like, yeah, okay, but if that's what you want,
do the football stance, you know, just
yeah. I jokingly say I'll know that I've arrived. When someday I hear Emmett Smith on an interview or Samuel Jackson on an interview complain, I keep getting mistaken for that Charles Andrew Payne.
That's right. Exactly. Right. Let's get there. Let's do that. Absolutely. I love it. Charles, I can't believe it. It's like we've been almost an hour. This has like been such a tremendous joy to have you on here. We covered, I think, most of the things that we talked about before the show, but I know that there's probably like a billion things that we would love to talk about with you.
Yeah.
But we'd love to have you back again. You know, we can go over, actually, I like to talk about acting as the craft and maybe even break down a little bit and, you know, a master class for some of the viewers. But we'd love to have you back again anytime. And good luck with the film coming out in 2 days. Everything is down at the below. Anybody who's watching this on YouTube, all his info is there. All his social media platforms are there as well. Follow Charles. He's awesome. And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. Absolutely.
Pleasure. All right.
Wow.
Wow. Talk about, you know, just, oh. What a great conversation that was. I mean,
I know. And, you know, I again, it always happens. I look up and we're at almost an hour.
Yeah, because like, we get so deep hour. Into this. Right. And then you realize, holy cow, it's like flew by.
Like, I could do another hour, man.
Yeah, but we definitely have to have him back. And like you said, really get into the acting. And like, I would love to watch you guys talk about acting because, I mean, you're an actor. He's an actor. I would love to really dive into the weeds.
I would love to do that. And, you know, we'll definitely invite him back and hopefully he'll make time for us again because this was awesome. So as always, we want to thank everybody for tuning in. We love you guys. You guys are so awesome and we appreciate all the support. We want to thank also our companies, our sponsor. We want to thank promotions people as well. That's really, really been great. working with them. And all of you just tuning in here, we really appreciate you. George, thank you very much as always.
Thank you, sir.
And we will see you all again next week, same time, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, counterpartsshow.com. Don't forget to download our new app, actually. You can watch it there, and it's pretty cool. So thank you, everybody. Take care. God bless. Talk to you soon. And as always,
peace.